Lutheran Public Radio is now a nonprofit organization. That means all past, present, and future gifts to LPR are tax deductible. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and mail it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support.
Jesus told us to love thy neighbor as thyself.
Religious faith, the source of so much inspiration, an excuse for so much evil.
The Torah commands, that which is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow.
I believe restoring religious faith to its rightful place as the guide to our world and its future is itself of the essence.
In Islam, there is the hadith that reads, none of you truly believes until he wishes for his brother what he wishes for himself.
We have every state represented here today, a half a dozen head of states, 182 nations represented.
The same is true for Buddhists and Hindus, for followers of Confucius, and for humanists.
Well, in the first part of the program today, we continue a conversation on biblical masculinity. Of course, the Bible identifies male and female, but what's been lost recently in the church, perhaps the last 50 years, some might even say the last 1,000 years, where we find more women in church on Sunday than men, and not just that, but the appeal of Christianity has turned distinctly toward the feminine. I wouldn't call it the feminization of Christianity, perhaps the emasculization of Christianity. Part two of a three-part series with Dr. Gary Zeroth on men in the church today, the church's response to femininity. That's the first part of the program today. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Tuesday. It's the 10th of February. You can join us for the next 2 hours. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. And our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE. In the second half hour, Dr. David Adams of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis joins us to talk about the alleged discovery of a Bible written in the native language of Jesus. We shall see. A lot of these discoveries don't have a very clear pedigree. We'll see if this one does. Stephen Clark of Missouri Roundtable for Life will be our guest in the second hour of the program. Talk with him about a legal challenge. Actually, the third part of the first hour of the program. We're going to talk with him about a legal challenge of the wording of an embryonic stem cell research ballot initiative in Missouri. The wording is very important, depending, and it does determine in some ways how people vote on these ballot initiatives. The second hour of the program is devoted to eternal life. Our guest, Dr. Lewis Brighton of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or email us talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Gary Zeroth is associate pastor at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Kingsville, Maryland. He leads retreats titled Real Men Follow Jesus. Dr. Zeroth, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Todd. It's great to be back again.
Yesterday, we were talking about the biblical model of masculinity, if you will, and there's something that we didn't get to that I'd like to start off with today, and that is the two extremes that you describe that men might take apart from that biblical model. What are they?
Yeah, the one extreme would be what is normally called the poser, or some might even say the macho man. The other extreme would be effeminacy. But let me just briefly talk about the first one for a minute. Probably the biggest problem with starting or maintaining a men's ministry within a congregation would be the first one, is when a group of men get together, there might be what we call posers among them. That is, they put on a facade. They're hiding behind something that they're really not. And after a while, not to be exposed for who they really are, they will leave the group out of fear of being known. I don't know if you ever had a bully pick on you when you were younger. That happened to me in the fourth or fifth grade. you know, just a true bully. He would pick on those who were younger, smaller, unable to defend themselves, and this can be described as this type of a man. Someone who has not learned, I guess, or had biblical models or fatherly models in their life to understand what a man is or should be. And this is the difficulty in our own culture. We don't have that model. A poser, I guess, can be described as autonomous, independent. They enjoy inflicting pain upon others, but they will avoid at all costs of receiving pain. They can be described as people who will inflict pain, but then run and hide. You know, this can be a common occurrence among men, especially some men in the church. And as I said yesterday in yesterday's program, the call that men want to run away from is the call to deny themselves, to give up their, and I'll use the word pride, give up their pride and follow Jesus, who is the true man, the real man, whom we need to learn from, especially learn from his sacrifice, what it means to give up for others, for the sake of others. The other extreme model, which I won't say much about, is effeminacy. And simply put, it's a period perhaps in a boy's life, in a younger boy's life, when he was unable to detach from his mother's influence and attach to a father's influence or another male's influence. And so throughout his life, he wasn't able to let go. And so he's retained some of the characteristics, the attachments to the feminine, or if you will, to his mother. And this can be discussed and argued or debated psychologically, but there's a lot to be said about the separation of a young boy from mom to be identified with father, with dad, his main role model in his life. And so these, you know, in summary, these are the two extremes, the poser and the effeminate man, that can happen if we don't follow a pattern or even a model of biblical masculinity.
Let's talk about how in the history of the church has, for good or for ill, identified with femininity. How far would you go back, Dr. Zeroth?
Yeah, now you've mentioned Leon Poddles a few times in your broadcast, and he's written a significant book, The Church Impotent, The Feminization of Christianity, very, very well researched. And in my retreat, I draw some things from his book. But as far as we can tell, men and women participated equally in Christianity until about the 13th century. And if anything, men were more prominent in the church, not only in clerical positions, which are restricted to men, but also in religious life, which was also open both to men and women. And it was only around the time of the 13th century when these differences started to emerge, and these differences can start to be seen both in demographics and in the quality of a person's spiritual life at that time. And actually, these changes that occurred happened almost rather rapidly, and it wasn't only in the Latin Church, but these differences in the sexes that began at this time could see also the increase in women's participation and also the decrease in men's participation. In fact, it was the medieval feminization of Christianity that followed. We can pinpoint three movements in the 13th century. We could say the bridal mysticism that was led by Bernard of Clairvaux, a kind of women's movement at the time, and also the emergence of scholasticism, or a school of theology during this time. And we can look back and really determine that in the 13th century, the concurrence of these three trends caused the Western Church to become a very difficult place for men.
Okay, with only about a minute and a half here, you mentioned a term, bridal mysticism, and I'm concerned that some people will say, doesn't Scripture actually depict the church in bridal and feminine terms. How would you distinguish the proper understanding from this, perhaps this abuse? About about a minute and a half before our break.
That's fine. Women, because of male mortality, there was a larger instance of male mortality, and so there was more women, just to put it in simple terms, going to church than men. And so Bernard, at this time, wanted to identify his message more with his audience, which was predominantly women, because they lived longer. And in order to do this, he picked up on a erotic language taken from the Song of Songs, or the Song of Solomon. And it was his interpretation of the Song of Songs that slowly gave way to this individual interpretation in which the soul of the Christian is the bride. Yes, the church is the bride of Christ, but now that became very individualized, so much so that Jesus has now become our husband. And so how can men identify with Jesus as their spouse or as their husband? Not like women can. And this was the one occurrence or the one change that happened because of Bernard's preaching at that time.
Let's take a break here, and when we come back, it sounds as though it's now, from Bernard of Clairvaux's bridal mysticism, become something even more trivial. Jesus is not in Pop American Christianity, in song and prayer and some worship practices, not just husband to the individual bride. He is boyfriend, sometimes even closer to girlfriend, a feminized Jesus, an emasculated Jesus as well in Pop American Christianity. And we'll talk about some of the reactions in the church against the feminizing trends, especially the reaction of the reformer Martin Luther. We're talking about men in church. Dr. Gary Zeroth is our guest. He leads retreats titled Real Men Follow Jesus. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday, February the 10th. Stay tuned for more.
Man, I feel like a woman.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely upon you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Often imitated, never equaled. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. But due to the heavy volume, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available 24/7, 618-223-8384.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Neil Cuney, Pastor Eric Nelson, Jay Lemke, Herbert Kruger, Pastor Wesley Kahn, Pastor Thomas Olson, Pastor Brett Mueller, Gary Tollefson, and Alice Brager. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday, February the 10th. I want to hear from you on femininity and the church, men and the church as well. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Talkback@issuesetc.org and our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. So how have we gone from bridal mysticism, Dr. Zeroth, in the days of Bernard de Clairvaux, to what can be argued Jesus is my boyfriend or girlfriend in Pop American Christianity?
Well, I think the terminology today might be having a personal relationship with Christ. It might be akin to me asking you, Todd, now we've never met face-to-face before, and but, you know, how would you feel if I asked you, would you like to have a personal relationship with me? How would you respond to that?
I would probably, I mean, if I did not know you, I might consider it a come-on.
Okay. Yeah, you might.
And an inappropriate one at that, yes.
Right, right. Well, this is the language that is used in a part of Christianity that is a reflection from way back when that has made its trek through Christianity, through the sweetness of pietism, through this language that was developed by Bernard, a language that expresses the union of the soul and God in terms that are actually highly congenial to women, but not to men. Women are all about relationships, and men aren't. That's not where men are usually fixated. And so the language has to change in contemporary Christian culture. And I think men would be more akin to fraternal-type language, brotherly-type language. They can relate to that. We get gravitated towards heroes in our society, sports heroes, but we really get gravitated towards the war hero and war movies, because there we see a bunch of soldiers working together for a common cause, giving up their lives, their sweat, their blood, so that they can win the victory. And we gravitate towards this kind of manly relationship rather than a personal relationship with Christ, which we just cannot really identify with.
This email comes from Mark in Bel Air, Maryland. He says, I've noticed that the church can be described in both masculine and feminine terms. We have the metaphor of the church militant, and St. Paul's description of Christians putting on the armor to do battle, masculine language. On the other hand, the most familiar picture of the church is that of the Bride of Christ, an emphatically feminine image. How are we to reconcile these different ways of understanding the church? Do you think that the feminization of the church might stem in part from a misunderstanding of both biblical masculinity and biblical femininity? Your thoughts there, Dr. Zeroth.
Well, it's very, very true that we've lost the image and concept of church for men. And I think it's the language that we use. I'll go back to the language and identification. When we look at Christ in the church, what do people normally see, and how are people brought up to see Christ, and what image do we normally have of Christ? More often than not, he is described in terms in feminine terms, as meek and as mild, gathering children around in his arms and just kind of a sweet image we have of Christ. But we should bring out the warrior culture in the church more than we have, as Luther did back in the Reformation days, and also give a different image of Christ, a more balanced image of who he was within the church, that he was a warrior. He did overturn the tables in the temple area. He did rebuke the Pharisees. He was stern against his disciples. We tend not to look at Christ in this way. And so I guess the key term is out of balance. The church has become out of balance in our perception of things, and especially in our perception of who Christ is.
Let's talk about the Reformation. Was ever Reformer Martin Luther mindful of this trend that you talked about with Bernard of Clairvaux, the bridal mysticism, and did he ever have anything to say in correction of it?
Yes. Correction carried its way all the way through the Reformation, and Luther, of course, said a few things about it during his time. How Luther reacted to the feminization of the church and Christianity was that he reminded Christians that the chief foe was the devil, who was more and more seen as active in human agents, whether they were papists or witches or whatever. And so this was Luther's reaction, was to set up, again, this mindset that we are in a battle, a spiritual battle against the forces of evil. And so Luther also returned to the patristic models of spirituality that led once again to a portrayal of the life of a Christian as in a battle. And this is essentially masculine, this image that had seemed to have been lost for the previous 200-300 years. And of course, the battle, as we've learned in our catechism, is the three evil powers: the world, the devil, and our own flesh. And we bring this out all the time in our catechetical instruction. And Luther always understood the whole history of the world as a battle of demonic power against God, who is the Creator and the Redeemer. And of course, you know, the weaponry that we would need, and Ephesians chapter 6 would be brought up. And whenever Luther would write, you could tell that he was writing in a masculine tone. And he would bring out, he would talk about the bride of Christ, of course, but he wouldn't put that in individual terms. He would rather more emphasize, as I mentioned, that the church is more of a fraternity between brothers.
There was something in his hymnody, something in his preaching and writing that understood that there was always, the Christian always existed on the front line of that battle, that there was never, either for male or female, but there was never really a time when the church could say, we'll take a rest for a while, but it was kind of an ongoing battle. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, the battle occurs on many fronts. I do a lot of work with the families, and I try to work as a pastor with husbands and fathers, especially, and the battles that we deal with on a daily basis. But I think more importantly, the concept that Luther emphasized was the daily struggle and the daily battle within our own selves against sin. And that's where baptism for us as Lutheran Christians becomes so very central to our understanding of the role of Christ and the role of the death of our sinfulness, our sinful condition, our sinful nature, and the resurrection to a new life. So he stressed the daily death and the daily rebirth through baptism of the believer's life, and that is really where the battle is supposed to take place. That can only be conquered through the preaching of the word and the administration of the sacraments.
Luther's theology was decidedly objective. That is, not subjective, not a theology of how I feel or personal experience per se. With only about a minute here before we conclude this part of our series with you, how is that instructive for us today in the church?
I'm sorry, say that again, Todd.
This emphasis in Luther on the objectivity of the truth, the objectivity of the Christian faith, and not the subjective kind of how I feel about it or experience aspect.
Yeah, and that's an important distinction to make today in church. Is our foundation? Men in particular need foundation. They need something to chew on, something that is truthful. When we get into ourselves, and when the final object becomes our feelings, it can turn men off, because we are not as emotional. We are emotional, but not as, generally speaking, as women. And so we need objective truths to hang our hat on, so that we can know what's true, what's just, and what's right. And so we can take these truths with confidence and courage and boldness out into the world to defeat these evil powers.
Tomorrow we're going to discuss how the church can help men, what to do and what not to do. Dr. Gary Zeroth is associate pastor at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Kingsville, Maryland. He also leads retreats titled Real Men Follow Jesus. Thanks for being our guest. Looking forward to tomorrow.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks so much.
When we come back from this break, Dr. David Adams joins us here at the bottom of the hour. There's been a discovery of a Bible said to be written in the native language of Jesus. Its age in dispute, its pedigree in dispute. We'll find out what it's all about when we come back. Dr. David Adams of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, then Stephen Clark of the Missouri Roundtable for Life will join us to talk about a legal challenge to the wording of an embryonic stem cell research ballot initiative in Missouri, the last part of Issues, Etc. The entire last hour we'll spend with Dr. Lewis Brighton of Concordia Seminary talking about eternal life. That's coming up on the other side of this break. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Evangelical and Catholic. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. Issuesetc.org.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
It's pretty much assumed everyone listening to this radio station knows about the Super Bowl. You're likely also familiar with the creative and edgy ads they run to take advantage of the huge viewing audience. But there's one ad NBC Network executives didn't want you to see. It combines ultrasound imagery with President Barack Obama's family history. Based on the evidence, had they gotten their way, the abortion industry would never have allowed him to be born. NBC says it doesn't allow political advocacy or issues ads, but at the same time, it approved an ad from PETA, the radical animal rights group, provided they tone down the sexual content. Take a look at the ad they didn't want you to see by visiting today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Alex Fletcher, Lura Meyer, Virginia Engebretson, Vicki Jones, Don Baker, Deborah Henry, Jeff Jensen, Janelle Cassara, Raylene Jaros, and Andrea Campbell. Thanks for your support.